From Nashville and Charlotte, this is the Shrink Tank Podcast. Each week, our panel of shrinks takes a look at pop culture through the fascinating lens of psychology. I'm Dave Verhagen here in Nashville. I'm a psychologist, author, Comic-Con panelist, and goat herder. And our trending topic today is the rise of YouTube stars. That's in our second segment, but first let's meet our panel. Our Charlotte panel includes psychologist, author, AspieCon founder, and Comic-Con panelist. He's also author of the popular Max Gamer graphic novel, and he's written book chapters on the psychology of Star Wars and The Walking Dead, among others. And he's back from a six-week break. It's Dr. Frank Gaskell. Hello, Frank.
Hello, Dave. I'm back. Who knew?
Are you feeling happy?
I'm feeling calm.
I've not talked to you yet about your sabbatical, so what would be one takeaway from the whole time off?
Okay, here's my one takeaway. There is a convenience store in Burnsville, North Carolina, called like Cruise Through Drew's or something. And you go in there and they've got everything you could ever want. But they're playing death metal. And as you're buying the food and things, you start to think, everybody here's white and has tattoos and they're large and it's a drive-through. And I don't know what's happening. You walk out and your daughter says, hey, guess what? Those are neo-Nazis. And you ask, how do you know that? And she points to a little picture above the convenience store of a little green frog named Pepe, which is the symbol of white supremacy and neo-Nazi. So my takeaway is I gave money to white nationalists in exchange for grape-flavored water.
Wow. What a good sabbatical, Frank.
Yeah.
Yeah. Glad that took 6 weeks to develop.
Good times.
But it was very good.
Okay. Well, we're glad. We'll take your word for it. Also, Emma Kate Wright is here. She's a doctoral intern. Actually, she has just finished her PhD. She's Dr. Emma Kate Wright. And she's a contributor to ShrinkTank.com and a panelist for Heroes Con. Hello, Emma Kate.
Hi there.
And are you done with your internship?
I am not done with my internship because for licensure, I have to do a postdoc internship. So I have one more year of supervised experience.
God.
I know. And then I got to take an exam.
But are you done with the pre-doctoral internship?
Yes, I am done.
So we have to call you now postdoc,
yes.
Emma Kate, right?
Postdoc.
Okay. Because you're postdoc.
Postdoc EK Dub.
Beautiful. And finally, Jonathan Hederle is here. He's a licensed professional counselor, an expert on substance abuse treatment. He's our certified Asian on the panel. He's written published book chapters on Game of Thrones, Star Wars, and The Walking Dead. He's also served as a panelist for Heroes Con. And each week, he rounds up two great stories of psychology in the news that we call Being Human.
So, people born after 1995 aren't millennials and need their own category, according to a professor of psychology that has researched generational differences for 25 years. So, folks born in 1999 are today's 18-year-olds, and that's the last millennial birth year. However, this psychology professor named Jean Twenge, hopefully I'm pronouncing that wrong, notes that the millennial cutoff should be around 1995 and not 1999, because kids born after 1995 are the first generation to spend their adolescence with a smartphone. And she cites several developments over the years. In 2010, teens started to spend their time much differently from the generations that preceded them. And in 2012, there's been a sudden shift in the psychological well-being of adolescents. So young folks are spending more time on tech, less with their friends, and depression, anxiety, and loneliness have shot up since 2012. Frank, is this another blame tech for the ills of the world, or is this psychology professor onto something here?
I think he's absolutely onto something. it was interesting. He cited, I think it was a...
It's a she, by the way.
Oh, she. A study where kids who went to camp came back for like a week at camp, better able to deal with social skills, nonverbals. They seemed happier. And I think it's what's happening to society in general, all becoming siloed into our electronics. And we're losing that ability or learned opportunity to socialize with one another. And I was at the mall just a couple days ago when school was out. And number one, I was surprised at how few kids were at the mall. There were some, but they were all on their phone. And they weren't just playing Pokemon Go. They were just staring at their phone while they were walking around. And the other part of this study, it says that kids just aren't socializing the way they used to. But I don't blame the kids for this. This iGeneration, that lays at the feet of parents, that they're not setting the example. They're not setting the limits on kids so that they can be healthy, non-depressed, non-anxious adults.
Yeah, I think parents are definitely contributing to this. Well, and just society as a whole, where now, you know, okay, so as a kid, I worked a job. And that gave me money to be able to go to the mall and go hang out with my friends. But now, economically, you know, in order to do well, you have to get more education. And so parents are encouraging their kids to study. And then even then, they just spend a lot of their time up in their room. Their social life is on their phones. And so it's not that big of a deal that, oh, they're not working. And, oh, we're not going to the mall with our friends anymore, because everything is in their hand in terms of their socialization. And so, you know, I think you make up a good point where, like, we really do need to shift the focus to parents a little bit and say, yes, like, this is where we're at. Technology is not going away. And so you guys need to be the ones to curb how much time your kids are spending on their phones.
Frank's sabbatical's done him good, because I actually agree with him. This is amazing. Let's mark this day. And here's something that I've been wondering about. You know, I speak at a lot of these conferences around the country, and all the therapists that go there, they just bellyache about the kids these days on their smartphones and on Instagram, and they just complain about the technology and the social media. And my whole position has been, it does you no good to complain about this. You just have to understand it well and enter into it. But what I'm wondering about is, do therapists, mental health people need to play a bigger role in advocating for what's healthy now, not just accepting this is the shape of culture, this is the direction things are, but that we really need to be pushing to bring people to healthier understandings of this? What do you guys think about that?
I definitely think we need to take a larger role in advocating and providing psychoeducation and developing some positive solutions and strategies, not just, again, for the medical model of problem solving, but also for life enhancement and prevent them from getting to a point where you see all of this negative outcomes based upon their irresponsible or unhealthy use of technology.
Yeah, I don't necessarily fault parents, because
they
in every
therapy.
Generation, it's always like, how do I parent this child? How do I parent? So I think it's our responsibility to step in and provide education and provide guidelines, because it's new to a lot of these parents, all this technology. They're still trying to figure it out as well.
All right, so moving on. This next study looks at how depressed people have a hindsight bias, where they project their bleak outlook on past events as well as the present and the future. So in their paper, Hindsight Bias in Depression, researchers sought to establish a link between depression and hindsight. One of the authors said, depression is not only associated with a negative view of the world, the self, and the future, but we now know with a negative view of the past. And hindsight bias focuses on foreseeability, inevitability, and distorted memory for initial expectations. And while non-depressed people tend to show hindsight bias towards positive events, but not negative events, people with depression show the reverse pattern. So, Emma Kate, what do you make of these findings, and do you buy it?
Yeah, no, I think this actually feels pretty intuitive when you think about depression and how you struggle with being kind of stuck in these negative thought patterns. And so you get fixated, and that interferes with your ability to remember other facts and information. And if you are fixated on those negative details, the negative things that happen, even if it's small, then it would make sense that how you interpret an event that occurred previously, you're like, oh yeah, I knew it was going to go like that because everything is crappy and everything goes that way. So this makes sense to me.
You know, Emma Kate, I can tell that you have been to school, because I just learned from you that hindsight bias, I thought it meant more likely to look at a person's butt. So now that's real clear for me. I appreciate that education. Thank you.
You're welcome. It's not going to stop. You're welcome.
It's not going to stop Frank from looking at people's butts, though, by the way.
No, I'm going to stay
just
out
yours,
of that conversation.
Dave. Just yours.
All righty. And with that, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, it'll be our trending topic. It's the rise of YouTube stars. This is the Shrink Tank Podcast.
Good psychology can change your life. At PsychBytes, we feature articles and videos with practical psychology that you can use every day. PsychBytes is a new psychology website with free articles and videos from dozens of the best psychology experts. Check it out on psychbytes.com.
Welcome back to the Shrink Tank Podcast. I'm Dave Verhagen here in Nashville, along with Frank Gaskell, Jonathan Hederle, Emma Kate Wright in Charlotte. And our trending topic today is the rise of YouTube stars. This is certainly nothing new. Been going on for over a decade, and yet we're seeing some stars that are making their mark primarily on YouTube and similar platforms, and they're becoming bona fide celebrities without ever touching traditional media, or at least not touching traditional media first. So let me ask you guys, before we launch into specifics, if there's anybody on YouTube or any of the social media platforms that you follow, anybody that you follow?
I do.
I follow a cat.
You follow a cat?
I do. It's Maru. He's really cute.
Yeah, I follow a channel called Teddy Films.
And is that Teddy Films?
Yes, there we go. Old for editing. Okay. Yes, I follow Teddy Films. And that's TEDDIE Films. And I also follow Sneaky Zebra. These are interesting YouTube channels.
YouTube Red.
That play parody music videos or things related to cosplay.
Okay.
Woo. There's that.
Sure.
Jonathan, anyone that you follow in particular?
I follow a YouTube channel called Fine Brothers Entertainment, and it's really a couple brothers that actually even helped start the React video phenomenon that's been around for a while, and they even created their own channel, YouTube channel called React, long ago, hoping that that would be a central hub for people to share their React videos, which we know everybody instead has just made their own YouTube pages. But they do a lot of different kind of episodes, celebrities reacting to stuff, games and contests, and they have a lot of different both celebrities and just up-and-coming people that use that platform.
And what's cool about all these platforms and all these stars is that they have their own area of specialization or niche that they're really good at. So you might, if you're interested in fashion or beauty, you can find someone who could talk about that. If you're interested in men's issues, you can find someone who's really good and personable, entertainment, watching video games, video game walkthroughs, all this kind of stuff. It's really amazing. I'm going to give you guys two examples of YouTube stars. One set that are in my neighborhood and the other that are in your neighborhood in Charlotte as just examples. And here in Nashville, there are two guys named the George Twins, and they are twins who are amazingly talented musicians. And what's cool about them is not only are they super nice guys and very personable and very talented, they have built a following on YouTube that's pretty incredible. One of their videos has hit 11 million views. Another one is 2 or 3 million. And then they have lots of others that are in multiple thousands of hits. And what's the reason I bring them up, first of all, they're super talented people. But the other is that they've been approached by people in the industry who want to represent them, folks, including at least one very big name in the industry who wanted to represent them and sign them. And so far, they've declined that because they can reach an audience on their own terms without any of that. So they're bypassing, at least so far, kind of the traditional channels and the traditional paths to that kind of success. Another example are another set of brothers that are right down the road from you guys. and they're in Davidson, which is just a few miles down the road from Charlotte, and they're the Greer brothers. And you've got three brothers, Will, Hayes, and Nash, and in particular, Hayes and Nash have made big names for themselves, primarily through YouTube and Vine videos. Hayes ended up parlaying that to Dancing with the Stars and some other traditional media. Nash continues to be a big presence. And so you've got these young guys that are very well known, in certainly among certain circles, and have big followings and don't even have to go through the traditional avenues and the traditional kind of channels. So do you guys know any other folks like that that you're aware of that have become big name or that have large followings that haven't done it through traditional media?
Yeah, I've been watching the Food Network, and there's this woman named Hannah Hart, H-A-R-T. She had, I think her YouTube channel was My Drunk Kitchen. So she just started getting a little bit drunk and cooking. And she has 2 million followers. And now the Food Network has given her her own show. That's fascinating that it's just backwards, that the online audiences are driving traditional media.
But does she burn things? Like, or is it?
Well, maybe, but she's not drunk on the Food Network show. Okay. She's been doing it since 2001.
Well, let me ask you guys, as we move into the kind of the psychology of this conversation, what strikes me about this is that now you've got, you know, always in celebrity culture, you've had people who feel like you know them. You know, you see them on television and you feel like you know them. But now it's even closer because they're folks that are in videos on YouTube and similar platforms, and they're responsive to their audience. The audience might write in or send a video in, and they're responsive to their audience. They're more available and accessible to their audience through conventions and local appearances and things like that. And so now we've got this sort of even greater connection and responsiveness from YouTube stars who are now these celebrities and their audience. Is there any other aspect of it that you feel like makes this different from a psychological standpoint than how it used to be in celebrity culture and entertainment before?
Well, a couple things. One is, I mean, when I think back growing up and you'd see the National Enquirer and a lot of celebrity chit-chat was around gossip and it was very salacious, and a lot of times there was not a high accuracy rate to that. And now it's not just about the provocative, it's these YouTube celebrities just talking about the everyday mundane aspects of their lives and trying to be really authentic and sincere with their audience. So that's one. The other is that, you know, and we just looked at this in the Being Human segment, that you have young folks that are actually spending less time with their friends, and so these become much more real friendships and relationships that really have replaced face-to-face interaction that a lot of young folks have with friends. And so you do develop this connection with these YouTube celebrities because a lot of people don't have real-life counterpoints to base this off of. These are their best friends, and so naturally they want to spend time with them because that supposedly helps them feel less lonely and disconnected.
Well, that, and then in our digital age, gaming is something that I haven't ever really done much of. But when I was researching for this, I had absolutely no idea. You know, people are, you know, YouTube stars are all showing off their gaming skills, and they're just making funny commentary while they're playing, and they're making millions of dollars doing this. And I'm like, what have I done wrong here? Like, I need to get into something like that. But I mean, it's cool though, because they get to really kind of dive in with these people in an area of interest. So I think you're right, Jonathan. Like, these are their friends. Like, these are the things they enjoy.
When I watch some of those Minecraft walkthroughs or, you know, Team Fortress game, those YouTube channels, and they've got all these subscribers, I kind of feel like I'm going insane. Because
that's what did it.
When I watch PewDiePie, I feel like I'm in an insane asylum. Because if all of these people are loving this and I am annoyed by I don't like most of what I've seen. And so I feel like you liked what you saw
on the Teddy video channel, right? You likey.
Teddy Films.
Teddy Films.
Teddy Films. There's an E there.
I think it's funny that of all the things that are going on in culture right now that make Frank feel like he's going insane, it's the video game playthrough.
It's weird.
It's like, oh, other people like this and I don't.
That's what he was exposed to last night.
Okay. That's another sign of health. Before my sabbatical, I would have said, they're all crazy. Now I'm saying, I'm crazy. See, change is good. There it is. Turn the world upside
good,
down.
Frank. Any other thoughts from you guys about the psychology of this whole phenomenon? Again, this isn't something that just happened. This has been building for the last decade or more. But any ideas about the psychology behind it?
Well, from a female perspective, at least when we think about girls and body image and kind of what we're pushing, a lot of these beauty vloggers we're really emphasizing like, oh, you need to be doing your makeup this way and you need to look a certain way. And I know that's not, I'm making a blanket statement here, but I do kind of wonder how this is shifting kind of the popularity and importance of, you know, making sure you look trendy and you're following, you know, these certain fads, whether it's like doing a nail design or a specific type of eyebrow. Like, I'm having a hard time with some of that just because, you know, there is this push to really to have girls do a lot of these intense makeup hair tutorial things. And I'm all about expressing yourself. But again, I don't like that we're kind of really overemphasizing some of that stuff too.
And I think, Dave, in terms of the intimacy of it and what, Heatherly, you were talking about in terms of friendship, we would sit and watch a television or we would go to a movie. Now the person is in your bedroom. And you are typing and talking to them and interacting in a way that, I mean, I wasn't able to do when I was growing up.
Oh, I always watched my Teddy films in my bedroom.
There it is. There we go.
And with that, we're going to take one last break. We'll be right back with our doctor's orders. And this is the Shrink Tank Podcast.
Hero House Publishing is pleased to announce Heroic Inspirations by Michael Kreitzer. Over the ages, superheroes in various forms have been speaking to humanity in togas, robes, and now tights and capes. They speak to us about the human condition. They help us work through our fears and failures. Heroic Inspirations draws out rich lessons superheroes provide for our daily lives. How does Superman teach us to deal with difficult people? What do the X-Men tell us about balancing individual and communal identities? Superheroes speak to these and many other life questions. Michael Kreitzer has been researching and teaching on superheroes for over 10 years, and now his book, Heroic Inspirations, is available to you at herohousepublishing.com or amazon.com. Order your copy today.
Welcome back with Dave Verhagen, Frank Gaskell, Jonathan Heatherly, and Emma Kate Wright with the Shrink Tank Podcast. We wrap this all up with our final conversation. We call this our doctor's orders. These are things that we're personally enjoying in pop culture. And Emma Kate, what do you have for us?
So I am really excited about the movie It coming out. And so because of that, I also really love creepy, scary things. And I stumbled across a podcast called Lore. And it's all about, it examines historical events that show the dark side of basically human nature. And essentially you're finding out the background behind scary stories, scary folklore for these different things. Like they talk about castles that are haunted. I think they even talk about like where Stephen King got his inspiration for, you know, movies. So it was really cool. So Lore, L-O-R-E, check it out.
How about you, Frank?
I would like to suggest to our audience to become very friendly with your local Lego store, because BB-8 is being released this week. It's 1,000 pieces and looks great. But the biggest news is on October 1st, Lego will be releasing a nearly 8,000-piece Millennium Falcon for $100 I saw it built at the Lego store, and I kind of blacked out for a little bit. So I recommend that.
So what you're saying is you're going to spend $800 pretty soon on a toy.
No. Okay. I'm going to spend $1,600. I'm going to buy one and build it and put the other one in a place as an investment, because Legos really increase their value, and this will be a rare piece that will be discontinued.
Do you do the same thing with your Tommy John underwear? Like, you buy one that you don't wear, you just keep it sealed for...
I would like to keep you sealed somewhere. I really, really would.
You guys did that in the 40s. It was called internment
sealed,
camps.
No air. Dark space. Thank you. Yeah.
And Jonathan?
Well, my family and I, we've been catching up on shows now that there's sort of this kind of pop culture doldrum. There's not a lot going on. So I've been watching the second season of The Man in the High Castle, which I'm still not totally sold on, but I want to see how it unfolds. And then my daughter and I, we've been watching second season of Attack on Titan, which I really enjoy. And we've been catching up on, actually, I introduced her to Rick and Morty. So that might be my both good parent and bad parent award of the year, introducing them to Rick and Morty. But I really encourage folks to use this time before the fall season to catch up on some shows that you've gotten behind on.
And my recommendation is a book called Killers of the Flower Moon, and the subtitle is The Osage Murders and the Birth of the FBI. It is a true life murder mystery that is set in the 1920s in Oklahoma, and I will not say more, but it is a superb book, and it's been optioned, I believe, by Martin Scorsese and Leonardo DiCaprio for a movie. And you want to get in on the book before the movie, so I'm going to highly recommend that. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the Shrink Tank Podcast. We hope you'll check out shrinktank.com for articles, videos, polls, and much more, all about popular culture. Make sure you check out shrinktank.com. And also, check us out on Twitter at shrink_tank, and like us on Facebook by searching for the Shrink Tank Podcast. Our producer and theme music composer is Sean Beck. In the Queen City, it's Emma Kate Wright, Jonathan Hederle, and Frank Gaskell. And from Music City, I'm Dave Verhagen. Thanks for listening. Please tell all your friends about us and make it a good week.
Shrink Tank.